Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and we'll be being joined by Yvonne Smith in just a few minutes to be going through the after debate of the Clinton-Trump debate tonight. We're asking that people from both disability communities and diverse communities call in tonight and speak out about the presidential debate and how either candidate will impact our communities. This is a current event show. The phone number to call in is area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, we fund this ourselves, but if people need a toll-free line, you can call 855-346-3351 or 267-521-0167. So as we wait for Yvonne to come in, and there are people on the line here, I just want to remind you that if you press 1 or star 1 when you're if you want to speak, that way we're flagged that you'd like to participate in the conversation. So our questions are, what can we expect from the candidates? And how can we go about, and without further ado, I want to just say I've got a line open here. 860, your line is open.
Hello?
Yes, hi. You're live on the air.
Hi, Lauren, how are you? This is Jonathan Holland. I think we've spoke before. I didn't realize, I don't think I hit star one yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I may have accidentally brought you in. Sorry to do that.
That's okay.
Okay. Would you like to start us off with a comment or an idea, or I don't want to put too much pressure on you.
What was, you know, I just watched probably, I don't know, 50% of the, really touched upon mental illness or anything. I mean, they did quickly talk about gun control and different things like that, and that whole issue as it relates to people diagnosed with quote-unquote mental illness. I don't know. I would say that it kind of starts with us, that I don't really research that much the political aspects of things. I look more at the sociological aspects. So I don't know how much I can contribute, but I don't know really how much we really. I don't think we can expect much from either to get to that level. Would take a long, long time, and I think change is going to, you know, occur just at a much smaller level, if it's going to occur the way we need it to, versus, say, the changes which have been occurring relating to, which are attached with, say, the National Alliance of Mental Illness and DBSA, which I disagree with in terms of busting stigma, so to speak. I think it's a very dangerous move for some instant gratification that's going to affect later generations.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Yeah.
Lauren, this is Yvonne Smith.
Hi, Yvonne.
How are you doing? I just was, you know, in awe of this whole this little debate thing. Regardless of how we feel about mental health issues, whoever's president of the United States is going to affect everything we do. And we are citizens of this world first and foremost, but I guess I'm a little biased about this, but I think this went pretty well for Hillary Clinton, And I'm just hoping that many of us will have looked at many of the debates and make a decision, because it does matter who is president of the United States. And we should, you know, really think about who is going to be in the White House and the decisions they make on all issues, not just those that are strictly isolated to the mental health area.
I think we are all going to be incredibly affected by these things, with no escape.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think about it? What did you think about the debate tonight?
Me? Well, I don't want to. I don't want to. There's some real work that needs to be done. I think it's clear that I think, you know, Hillary is holding a position, and I think Donald Trump did some digging for himself in certain places. My concern remains that people may feel so beat down by the whole system that they're not going to feel like their vote matters very much.
I get that feeling talking to people, you know, this week too about it. I was at the African American Museum opening, and on Saturday, but I have to say that being apathetic is not something that we can afford to do. We have a lot of things going on, whether it's in all the various parts of government, and it does matter who is president. It matters who is our congressperson, who is our senator, because they still will make decisions, even though people might say it doesn't matter, but it does matter who is there. But
I think it does, and I think when you look at the idea that something like stop and frisk can still even be getting a platform anywhere, let alone a presidential debate, even though people tried to re-steer the issue as unconstitutional, or the practice as unconstitutional, the fact that there's still a large presence for it's just another example as to how everything will get steamrolled, I believe, if we go forward.
It's even a matter of that someone would propose something that would say that something is still valid that the Supreme Court has knocked down. You know, that shows that, you know, individuals may not have respect for the rule of law and the process that we have. One of the things that, you know, very painfully clear is that when we talk about different policies as far as inpatient commitment, they vary from state to state, and depending on who is president, those resources might be, you know, added to a federal system. You know, but some people do have the option to move to a different place, but if we have people in the White House who think that things that we know that are unconstitutional are legal, you don't have any redress. I know many people have thought that some of the arcane laws that we see trying to be passed, that they think that eventually we'll have to fight those out in court. But if you have an executive branch of the government head that thinks that these are valid things, then, you know, it's a double whammy. It's a double thing that is happening. And I want people to call in. We are live at 267-521-0167, discussing the presidential debate that just occurred 2 hours ago and that is being discussed. If you want to come in fact, we'll open up the lines. Please feel free to comment on how you believe that the presidential election will affect all of us. The lines are open now. If you want to comment, please come in.
Lauren, am I still able to speak here?
Yes.
Am I muted?
Okay, no, you're lined up.
I was going to say, I didn't expect them to really touch upon direct issues relating to persons affected by mental illness or diagnosis, whatever you want to call it. And they didn't really talk about that. And I think that might be a map in which we could, or just guidelines in which we can see kind of areas in which we need to work on in terms of why are they not talking about certain issues, because faced with an epidemic, so to speak, hundreds of dying and being affected by, in my opinion, the practices of modern day psychiatry.
Jonathan, your line's going out a little bit.
I was saying, why is it why is this not a conspiracy? Biological psychiatry and the modern day practices. Why is it so transparent and nobody's talking about it? And I think there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation. But as it relates to, I think you guys are correct in that we are all going to be serious. If you take, say, Donald. Sort of discrimination towards women, towards many groups, large groups, women, really half the population, if not more. And then you kind of factor in poverty, and you look at poverty as it relates to mental health. We all know sort of the cure for poverty, and I'm kind of stealing this from Christopher Hitchens, but it's known as the empowerment of women. And it works every time, and the whole floor just rises up. So that's a major thing that's going to be, whether Trump is elected or Hillary's elected, that could really directly affect, in terms of, I just think poverty and looking at that issue is going to have a direct impact on mental health, whether it's exacerbated, the people's symptoms and behaviors or new diagnoses, the continuation of it. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, you agree.
Symptoms and behaviors or new diagnoses.
I think his misogynistic traits show clear through tonight on every level. But, I've got to say that I think we need to do some serious education of Hillary. Because I'm reading this quote here, and this was under a question in terms of whether or not she believes the police are implicitly biased against black people. And she said, but when it comes to policing, since it can have literally fatal consequences, I have said in my first budget we would put money into that budget to help us deal with implicit bias by retraining a lot of our police officers. I've met with a group of very distinguished expert police chiefs a few weeks ago. They admit it's an issue. They've got a lot of concerns. Mental health is one of the biggest concerns because now police are having to handle a lot of really difficult mental health problems on the street. They want support, they want more training, they want more assistance, and I think the federal government could be in a position where we would offer and provide that. And so the 21st century policing report that the surviving race group has been putting together comments for to get to the federal government completely slices at our rights and selves as people. On every level, supporting CIT and all of this other kind of stuff that we've been working on. So the fact that, that mental health came up specifically in a conversation that was asking, do you believe that police are implicitly biased against black people, right? So the vast discrimination now that's being, that's just seeping through and connecting psychiatry now to policing, and that the issue at why there are all of these police brutality and police killings is ultimately because of, you know, quote unquote, mental health problems on the street. And so I think that this is a major, even though it's an underlying issue and it's not the focus of what's happened, I think it still is something that we must be addressing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's incredibly linked. If you look at, you know, psychiatry is considered, or it's defined as a branch of medicine, where I don't think it belongs there. But it's acting as a branch of the law, but it's not considered a branch of the law, so it's not regulated. It's not surprising to me that this came up, as you point out, in this very, you know, this specific topic that, really it was the only time mental health came up. It was the only opportunity for it. That's not surprising.
Right, unless they were calling something quote unquote
fact.
Crazy, right? Because mental health came up, but crazy came up twice. That there's nothing really Donald Trump saying. There's nothing quote crazy about not letting our companies bring their money back into, and then he got cut off. And then the other point is Hillary saying, "Why not? Yeah, why not? Just join the debate by saying more crazy things." So. That's mental health and crazy. That's where it came up in those two exchanges with people laughing,
okay.
Right? So either where the excuse as to why police are struggling in their jobs so much and brutalizing and killing people at most times with absolutely no consequence, or where the joke, right? And so,
Lauren, I agree with you that we have to do some education, because I've long held that, this is Yvonne Smith speaking, that police shouldn't be really involved in mental health issues. There needs to be a decoupling of people with, quote unquote, I don't say I'm back, that are labeled having mental health or disability issues.
Yeah.
From
being dangerous.
I agree. Yeah.
From being dangerous.
And the police.
It shouldn't be there. But people have the false notion that when it comes to these things that police are helpers or first responders. They shouldn't be there. I mean, you just look at the incident that happened this past week where the gentleman was in a car. I don't care what he was doing, whether he had a gun or smoking weed or whatever. But, you know, for some reason, his wife thought by her yelling out that he's not going to bother you, he has a TBI, that would mean something to the police.
Right.
And there's a false notion that the police are like the EMT people that come. They're not. And there's no amount of...
And even if they were, hypothetically, the culture the culture hasn't changed yet. So no amount of training or retraining with the police is going to really change anything. Because think about the trauma that people who've been labeled, who've been diagnosed, who've gone through, you know, who've been in 4-point restraints, who've been held down by police, who say do have a diagnosis, and they go, this thing follows you forever. Where it's getting to the point where they're profiling us, where we say someone who's diagnosed with a mental illness can't purchase a firearm, and the violence, you know, I was just reading these ridiculous numbers in terms of.
Jonathan, you're so correct. So it is a profiling. The only thing I see that CIT does. It helps the police be able to identify a person that has a mental health issue, just as someone would say that a person is, you know, looking at them. You can't look at a person and tell whether they have a mental health issue, just like looking at a person saying that they are African-American or that they're you know, they're somehow a really bad dude. And those three groups of people throughout the last 200 years have been coupled together. That if you're a convict, I don't like to use those words, but if you're a returning citizen, you have mental health issues, or you're African American, the lens that's looked through is that that person is dangerous. And the presumption is that, you know, you have to use legal force. And that's the same thing when you should not be calling if you have a heart attack, you don't call a police officer to come out to do that. You call EMT. But that you're right. We have a tremendous
people are even problem. Hesitant to call. I think the EMTs to have anyone involved. I think some people are in a position. I believe where they're in they don't know what to do. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to.
And I think that this
up.
Is. Oh, sorry. Maybe your phone was breaking up. I didn't mean to cut you off, Jonathan.
No, that's okay. You can go.
Well, I just think
saying,
that there's, you know, the work that the surviving race group is doing in terms of creating strategies for eliminating police brutality and police killings. We're in the process, and hopefully other people will get on and talk about this who can talk about it better than I, but we're putting together platform development to get to other movements and other people and to respond to the federal government about the 21st Century Policing Report. And CITs were just pages of notes about the problems with the way that they're doing the trainings now. And the CIT trainings, and that we think it's a concern that's being addressed in a positive light by these reports. I'm getting a tremendous amount of feedback. There's two people on. There's one person on the. All right, let me see if I can. Okay, sorry. I hope that. That gets straightened out. Sometimes the Blog Talk Radio doesn't pay attention to the
what
phone.
What feedback are you getting, Lauren? I just got kicked off, but I just called back, so I didn't
know
your last minute.
There were double calls. I was getting just an echo, and I apologize. Live radio, folks, what are we going to do? So anyway, I think that if people want to get involved with the platform development process that the surviving race group is going through right now, we're looking for people to get involved, and this is all what we're talking about. What I'm hearing is my own voice in echo.
I thought that you meant people were texting or emailing you or, you know, live responding just to your comments.
No. If somebody has a cell phone on or the computer volume on,
okay. Maybe
if you can just not be on speaker. And Yvonne, I was just going to ask you if you wanted to jump in, but I'm sharing the links to the Surviving Race Platform Development website process, and our notes from the last call will be out sometime later in the week, and we'll have another call. Usually they're on Sundays, if people would like to get involved with that.
I think it was me with the feedback, and I hope it's gone now.
I hear you great now.
Okay. I think it was me. I had the phone on speaker. Yeah, but I just wonder if people are actually going to be watching. I'm hoping that there might be two other debates. Maybe there might not be, because I know that some people work under different rules, and this might be all that we see.
Right.
The lines are open there if anyone wants to make comment, because I don't know if usually if we ask people to press 1 or star 1 if they want to speak. This is a call-in. This is not our debate. We want to hear from you and hear how you felt about the debate. Even if it does not even if you're not going to comment on it, how it relates to our mental health and survivor community, but just overall, how did you think the debate went? How did you think the facilitator or moderator handled it? See, this is what I'm very much afraid of, that decisions on the election will be made because people are so apathetic that they really have no interest in it.
I think people have been so turned off by just the, you know, I personally haven't been following really it much at all. I think a lot of people have are sort of indifferent. Whether they vote or not is a different issue, but specific to what we're talking about, you know, and the group of people in which we're kind of, the community in which we're talking with, it's almost hard to know what to talk about because it's really like you have to make a real kind of stretch in connecting, mental health issues with at least tonight's debate. But the poverty definitely was something, which we talked about. And then, women's rights. And then what you were discussing in terms of, if with mental illness, you can't necessarily see it. Whereas, if you're African-American or, something else, you can. But with mental illness, for me, if you can see it based upon if the other person's a human being, because mental illness is very deceiving. It's a living, breathing thing that follows, that kind of carries with just culture. It's defined by culture and it sort of evolves with people, or not evolves, but, it almost, it's ever-changing. It's
a fraud.
It's a what?
It's an absolute fraud. I mean,
that's why I say that it's with everyone has it. Everyone has mental illness and everyone doesn't. It does exist. It's a noumena. That's what it is. That's what I think it is. And to be diagnosed is inducing a noumenal experience in those persons, and that's taking away a fundamental human right, where I think that all humans are entitled to a phenomenal experience versus a noumenal one. Something that sort of doesn't exist, once it's even spoken of, it ceases to exist. I don't know, I can't help but keep going over in my head why is there not a 15-minute discussion on mental health and how people are being diagnosed under circumstantial, it's also much of which is circumstantial, and then they're sort of in the system. ADD and then the medicines they give you, can lead to
the drugs, yeah.
Something else, bipolar, and then bipolar becomes schizoaffective becomes schizophrenia. And no one is in a permanent state of psychosis or hallucinations, unless that I know of, that I've read about, unless they're fending for their shoes and homeless and lack of nutrition, if they're homeless, so we get to the poverty issue. I mean, people, they snap out of it. There was a study back when that had a huge retention rate. It was an amazing study back when, what's his name, came into presidency, and they shut down, all the asylums and, I think there was 1,000 people who had schizophrenia, and there was like 70% retention rate in this study. And with no interference at all, the government and healthcare, this alliance, this marriage, people that not telling people what they should and shouldn't do, and forcible medicine or whatever you want to call it, these people, 70, I think it was 80% or more of these people, they went on to become doctors, they went on to become janitors, to become teachers, to become car salesmen, all these people had schizophrenia or were diagnosed with schizophrenia. This was back, I think, in, the 70s? And then
the Vermont Longitudinal Study?
Yeah, I don't. I can't remember. I might
Copeland,
be. You know, my number. Yeah,
not Marriott.
My numbers
not Marriott,
might be
no,
off.
Oh, this is so embarrassing. It'll come to me in a second.
Yeah,
Yvonne?
My numbers might be off, but it's a
yeah,
very powerful study.
Well, one of the things that we are included. What happens is that they're code words for us: law and order.
Right.
Those are things that will affect us when that is the way that we're looked at. We're looked at as a policing issue.
Correct.
And that's
what
I was saying earlier, that we should not be when there is some kind of human crisis. Police should not be involved because inevitably we will not be treated well.
Yeah, a person
and,
who's facing these crises is very expensive, and they cost a lot of time and energy, and people would rather not deal with it. It's a nuisance. They want to shut it down. It's disturbing to even family members. So psychiatry is acting in a way that it treats the family and those surrounding the very person who's suffering the most, and it's at the expense of that person. And the best example of that, I would say, would be ECT.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's evolved over the last 2 years. And you know, an article I think was just out, evolved in a, or devolved in a very serious sense. You know, an article in The Atlantic just came out, I think fairly recently, where this guy's talking about, you know, a guy gets ECT and then has a snack and goes back to his room. And the only people who are against it is, you know, CCHR, which was founded by Scientology. Incorrect. And we all know ECT, or we should know, is inducing seizures. And what they do now is they give you tranquilizers, which are the very thing which stops seizures from happening. So you have to increase the milliampage of the electricity that you run through your brain by, I think, even tenfold. So it looks more comfortable. So they think it's a much safer practice. But we have yet to see, we don't know yet. We'll know in 10 years, we'll know in 5 years. The
well, no, we know now. Wait a second. I want to interrupt that right now. We know right now that shock treatment is torture, that it is not effective, that it has
correct
multiple consequences, known consequences that are
right
intended, that the intention of shock treatment is to cause brain damage, that the intention is to wipe out memory, that the intention
yes
is to control people, and that
yeah
the government right
left
now is seriously limiting. I'm sorry, this is just, I just want to make sure that that's a clear.
This is your area of expertise, so go on, because you're absolutely correct.
Well, no, I mean, it's just that people should know that the FDA still hasn't come in on their response. They stopped responding to me long ago. I can't get a response phone call. But our petition and our complaint to the FDA is posted probably 400 times in the comments section in the attachments of people's comments. So whether or not they read it is another story. But the FDA, any day now, they're going to come down. Because, I am not in any way affiliated with CCHR, nor do I work with them, nor do I talk about it. That's just, I just want to make that statement. But it's the amount of attention that's been brought up again in recent days, weeks, around shock treatment. So the FDA is going to come in at some point. And one of the things that was in our complaint to the FDA ombudsman's office about the process of shock treatment was that the FDA was trying to downgrade it so that if somebody says that you require it because it's a quote-unquote emergency, or if you have depression, you know, quote-unquote depression, it's now that's what they're trying to qualify it for. And the American Psychiatric Association is working to try to get children shock for it to be used across the board with minors. Sorry to go on that little trail there, but it's just a step
it's
away.
It's scary
from
that the one article that I stumble upon, you know, and most recently about ECT is painting it as this, like, non-invasive, very effective treatment, because it's actually become worse, and they're covering it up. And I don't know if they're deliberately doing so, or they just don't care, or what it is, but
it's
deliberate.
It's deliberate.
You know all these numbers with the, I mean, you, you know the male amperage, how that's increased, and how, you know, the person's just, their foot just kind of twitches now versus kind of, you know, one flew over the cuckoo's nest back
which
in 1975.
Which isn't even legitimate, because I know people who saw that Fink video that is full of nothing but lies of where you see a person's pinky toe twitch a little bit, who have gotten severe physical damage, slip discs and all, or
no,
discs or stuff, all other kind of stuff from it.
No,
and yeah, they do
just,
need to increase. They do need to increase the wattage in order to overtake the effects of the sedatives and the muscle relaxers.
Correct,
but this is
yeah.
what the government wants us to do. So what I'm saying is, like, one way we're absolutely all destroyed and we have to figure out every way to combat that from happening, and on the other way, we're not going to be represented in any kind of way that is anything short of what is being attacked by the new administration, right? So
yeah, correct. I mean, in terms of, you know, combating it, I think it starts with, you know, pure fact, and then that will be kind of, I mean, it's almost we're in a situation where facts no longer, like, it's hard to have a conversation or debate about something like ECT when you're passionate about it, when it's almost like if I were to say, you know, gravity exists, and you go, no, it doesn't, and I drop a ball and I, you know, show you the formulas and this and that, and you still say, no, gravity doesn't exist. I mean, the debate ends there, and that's why it's at a standstill, because you also have this whole emotional thing, and you have the families who are pushing for ECT because it's been painted in this new light where that is so humane and it's so effective. And the reason is because a lot of the people who are receiving ECT aren't able to, after receiving 20 treatments or so of, you know, where it's 10 times the amount of electricity it was back in the 70s, they can't even speak for themselves in terms of standing up and advocating for, you know, what's being done. And of course it is brain damage, because, and of course it's going to relieve depression, but why don't we go back to lobotomy, straight up, like actual physical lobotomies, because, you know, the less thoughts you have, the less likely you're going to have a depressing thought, you know.
The way this all ties back is that, you know, there is a clear agenda to use quote-unquote mental health as the scapegoat for police brutality and police killings of people of color, and instead of saying, oh, and by the way, people who have psychiatric histories or who are called by the police when the police are called for this wind up getting killed exponentially higher rates than people who don't have psychiatric histories. Instead, we're just going to train everybody on how to further psychiatrize all of society. And, so that's our best hope, right?
Well, I was just on Hillary Clinton's website. And, you know, sometimes we have to look at things in other places where we might be included. And here's one of her statements. This is, today Hillary recognizes that there's still much work to do, including improving access to meaningful, gainful employment, as well as housing and integrated community settings for people with disabilities. Too many Americans with disabilities continue to be left out of the workforce. And for those who are employed, too many are under-stimulating jobs that don't fully allow them to use their talents. And too many end up having to live in separate facilities when they should have the opportunity to live at home and be in their communities. So I get some manner of hope from that. At least she still is reachable. And oftentimes politicians don't talk in the terms of the language that we would like to have them to speak in, but we still have to see where their policies or the stance that they have, how they will affect us directly, not just as people who have a mental health label or formerly have a mental health aid label, but how they will affect us, you know, on a wide variety of issues, And I personally believe having a person who does not respect the Supreme Court and the law of the land is not going to be very good for people like me.
I agree. That's what I mean. That this is still our, you know, that as bad as it is.
And people cannot. This is something that people cannot set out. This is something that you can't say that. Well, I don't like Trump. You could say, well, I'm not totally comfortable with Hillary because of some of her past policies. I would really like, I'm really looking at Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. This election is so close that it is going to hinge on small groups of people. Someone in different states and precincts, a group of people, maybe 10 or 15, may affect whether that particular precinct goes for Donald Trump or goes for Hillary Clinton. So even if we're saying that they don't say things that particularly speak to us, we still have to drill down. We still have to ask. We have to look at all their information and see what is the best decision for our communities. And I just don't see that Donald Trump would have anything that would be helpful for our community. And, you know, maybe others might see that differently. And if they do, maybe they should, come online and tell us how, where they would see that Trump would do something for our community. First thing is do no harm. I know that Jonathan and you, Lauren, you're speaking the truth, you know, about what's going on, but sometimes not even making things worse sometimes is better than taking some action that's going to throw us back 20, 30, 40 years. Now I want to get to Hillary.
Wait, what was the last thing you said? Can you repeat it?
I would like to get to her so that you know, even if some of the laws are passed.
No, not that part, the part before, that not making something worse. I just missed that last part.
Not making something worse. You know, for example, for me, is having somebody to have enough cognizance about the law to say that maybe some bills are unconstitutional and that if they came across your desk, you know, that they violate the rights of people and that you would veto it, you know, or that you couldn't put the full force of the executive branch passing something like, you know, 2646 or even, you know, maybe the Senate versions. If you have someone who is cognizant of the law of the land and how that's going to violate people's rights, that they wouldn't just for law and order purposes just pass it, because that's one of the premises of some of the retro laws that are passed in individual states or things that are passed in Congress. They just say, well, we'll just make it illegal. We'll just, you know, force people into treatment. And, it does make a difference when you have someone that is aware that, you know, people have rights, you know, and that the rights of individuals are not subject to what their individual status is, not subject to whether you're not a U.S. citizen, whether you have a disability status. And for me, those things are important.
Yeah, because psychiatry is so political, it's so economical, and not scientific, I think, it's important what you're saying. And I think it's even that much more important that psychiatry is sort of defined in the culture before we then sort of get in these deep issues in terms of that, in terms of really putting out, I don't know, I think it begins to me, it begins with what Robert Whittaker said. He's a medical journalist. You probably all know him. Anatomy of an Epidemic, Mad in America.
Of course.
A dialogue, creating a dialogue, and also storytelling. To get people to understand that, then we can get a real understanding of what psychiatry is, because it's not science. And it's, it's really behavior control. And if we can get to that point, then I think we can really have a conversation. We can make serious change, because it really is, it is politics. It is, economics. And it's not medicine. And it's causing more harm than it is good. I really believe, and a lot of people would say this is kind of harsh or abstract, but I think it's not even teetering on. We're really in a state in which psychiatry is acting as a form of eugenics, but no one knows it. I mean,
and
do you agree?
Since its inception.
Yeah, and if I were to make that statement, it sounds so grandiose or something. There's so much like I'm existing in a state of victimhood. That's the response I would get. And why is that? Why is somebody not willing to or not able to empathize with me, let alone sympathize with me? And they would just say I'm a victim. Why is it that they can't, empathize? It's because that discussion, that dialogue, that storytelling hasn't gotten to the point at which they can empathize. And I really think that's where it starts. I mean, back in with the civil rights and with the LGBT movement, no one really got anything done by just saying, it's bad for, white people are bad. It's bad to do this to black people, or, it's bad to treat, gay people as this and that, blah, blah, blah. Just like we're not going to get anywhere by screaming, psychiatry is this, and these people are murderers, and it's eugenics. I think that's too abstract for people. If I'm run around saying it's a form of eugenics,
that's okay.
Well, that's why we had to say that we're individual citizens entitled to all the rights of being an individual, all the human rights.
And what are our responsibilities as persons in this the mental health community, or whatever you want to call it? What are our responsibilities too, as related to that? Like in terms of, a person with a psychiatric illness murder someone, and then they plead the, like, I don't agree with the insanity defense. I mean that.
I don't think any of us do.
Okay.
I mean, the whole concept of psychiatry at its base is fraudulent, and so. Anything that extends from it, and it's a means, it's a tool of the state. I liked what you said before, that it's not regulated by the state and in direct form. While the state is in the process of putting a regulation on top of anybody who works in a quote-unquote peer, role. But the whole eugenics of it, the whole intention, of controlling, I mean, it goes back to, it was highly involved, the sterilization programs, the killing of hundreds of thousands of people in the asylums in Germany, testing the gas chambers. I mean, this has been an entire,
before and after, and no one knows about that, Lauren. It was called T4, Operation T4. And no one knows about that. And it should be talked about.
But we do talk about it. I mean, a lot of us talk about it. Not who get paid or anything.
Yeah. It's almost like, I mean, I'm in Connecticut, and I feel like it's kind of this black hole, whereas I think it's very progressive. I'm really, I'm amazed and proud of what's going on in Massachusetts and in other pockets across the country. It's really incredible. And, it makes me want to move to these areas to get involved, because there's only so much I feel like I can do I want to get involved. I want to participate. I want to educate myself, educate other people. I don't have all the answers. No, nobody does. I have to be operating constantly on the margins that I'll never know enough, as all people should. And that's, I can't emphasize, I can't, you know, reinforce enough the idea of this, of a dialogue, of storytelling,
yeah,
in order to really have people understand what truly is happening, and why people are, you know, because I could just rage about this forever. I could rant forever about it and go in circles, but that
right,
that never got me anywhere. But
Yvonne,
one of the things in the debate, I just wanted to say that, like I said, you have to look deep into things because I don't know if I can play this or not, but one of the stuff statements Trump made is that we have to take guns back to the, take guns away from the bad people, and we have
to
do, we have to do, we have to do. Oh, it's not working. Okay, I was trying to get that to play, but
I was trying to get some sound bites before the before it started too, and I wasn't technically savvy enough.
Yeah, you know, just take the guns away from the bad people. And that's a code word for people with labels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or people perceive,
right,
people perceive to be the bad people, you know, because
yeah, the mentally ill or the blacks. It's not like it's 10 people, like it's a, like it's an effing baseball team. It's a huge, you know what I mean? It's a huge
and Hillary
of people,
confirmed
the bad
it,
people.
Right?
How ambiguous can they be? But we know what they're saying.
That's maybe the one thing that they both agree on, that, you know, we're the bad people. That's a great point, Yvonne.
Not necessarily that both agree on it. I think what happens is you have to drill down and get what people are saying, and we don't have proper clarification. Now, we know that Donald Trump definitely is talking about using the full force of law enforcement. And definitely I think that Hillary is saying that there needs to be some gun control. And I don't know where people stand
on
that.
But in that space, she also said that what's needed is mental health training for the police. And she's putting $1 billion isn't anything in terms of federal budget, but it's still, you know, a chunk of money that's going to go towards.
Well, that's why you have to get to people and say that really police, see, that's a given. And if you're not in a large city, you're not in New York or someplace that has over 500,000 people, then what happens is sheriffs and police, they are first responders. If you're in a place that's only 30,000 people or you're in a county and
yeah,
That's what happens. The sheriff,
yeah, you're right,
comes out, you know, and but it's different. Those people would, if you're in a little small community of a few thousand, the sheriff or the chief of police would know everybody, and that's what's been lost. When CIT was developed, it was developed in a place called Memphis, Tennessee, which has a different culture and different community than a lot of places, where you have police officers who might have grown up in that community. And in other places, police are an invading force. And they don't want to be bothered with the, what they call nuisance cases, where they're called out. But somehow, some organizations have, I don't know if we would brainwash, but they sent signal to the community that somehow the police are helpers. You know, just as a fireman might help someone get a cat down, and that's not the case. And that's the problem. And the that narrative has not changed, and that's why you have people asking for more money for police to be involved and issues that I really should be taken care of by
a
social worker or a therapist.
Right, but I also think that it's, I think it's underlying, I think it's, I think it was beyond just the actual practice of the training or the practice of psychiatry,
they
the thought of it or whatever. But it's
weeks.
This it's this new message. It's this new it's not a new message, but it's this continuation of this message that that they're shifting the focus of discrimination from people of color to people who are who have quote unquote mental health problems, right?
I don't think
that,
it's
that,
a shift. I think it's including. I don't think it's a shift.
Well,
away
I
from
think
people
that
of
the
color.
Way
I think it's including
terms,
both
well,
groups.
Maybe it's just in terms of the exact question that she was asked, right? Which was. Secretary Clinton, last week you said we've got to do everything possible to improve policing to go right at implicit bias. Do you believe that police are implicitly biased against black people? And it, her response to that was that it's not right, that it, that it's an attempt to shift out, that the mental health is one of the biggest concerns because we now have police. Having, so that's how she chose to answer that question, right? Mm-hmm. So at a very I don't think that it's eliminating. I don't want to when I say shifting. So I if you're saying it's inclusive, I agree with you like that. That it's just being added, but the focus is moving toward this idea that it's a mental health problem and that psychiatry has an answer, right? That's implicit inside of this. If we're saying it's mental health, then we're saying that psychiatry and what's going is going to be useful.
Well, I don't think that she's saying that people that have people that black have a mental health issue. I think that what she's saying is that a common thread is that the police are being called for issues that are wrapped in mental health.
Right.
I mean,
I agree with you. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. And that's what the problem is.
And the public has been brainwashed also to feel as though that somehow the police should be involved, because otherwise why would you even talk about giving $1 billion to a police department?
Right.
You know, it's more like the police need to be trained to have a national standard of engagement. That sometimes you do not have to have total control. That if there's a situation, and I mean, I give an example where the man in North Carolina, you know, you don't have, somebody's doing smoking marijuana, back off. You don't have
right,
to engage.
Right, but that's not
that
what
person.
You're saying. She's saying she met with a group of police. They admit it's an issue. They've got a lot of concerns. Mental health is one of the biggest concerns because now police have to handle a lot of really difficult mental health problems on the street. They want support.
No, but what
they
I'm
want
saying
more training.
Is that they should not, what she needs to do and we need to get to her, is that the police should not be handling issues that are deemed
well,
human
I agree with you. Of course not.
Issues. They should not because they can't. It's too much of a switch up from being on a call, dealing with robbers and bad people, and then to have to be human to deal with people. I don't like to use the word deal with people, but where you're engaging in things where people cannot respond, whether you're, you know, on medication, which slows your response,
but
or you're having some emotional stress.
But she allows the police to completely not take responsibility for what it is that they're doing and winds up scaving it off, saying that it's – I mean, obviously, this is the better choice of the two, right, if this was all there was to choose from. But she is giving the police a free walk on this by saying that the problem is people who have psychiatric histories or presence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the problem is, and that's what needs to be fixed. And in that, it excuses any implicit bias against black people and moves the shift to it being, you know, education, I think, is really required.
Mm-hmm.
Education from not from the National Alliance of Mental Illness.
Right.
Absolutely not from the National Alliance of Mental Illness, nor BBSA. It needs to come from persons such as just, you know, you guys. And I mean, they call NAMI a grassroots, whatever, but I mean, you have Will Hall, you have Orris Cohen, you've got Sasha DeBruhl with the Icarus Project, got all sorts of people I could name who, these are the people who, you know, really have their finger on the pulse of, you know, what's really happening, and they need to be heard.
Well,
I think, and there are also a lot of people of color who have been doing this for a long time who have solutions that really also need to be heard in terms
I agree.
Well, we'll have to see what happens in the future debates and see if those issues come up. I think there's supposed to be two more debates.
Yes. And
what about the this whole, you know, as it relates, could relate to, you know, mental health, the kind of the opiate or heroin epidemic, that kind of gets all, you know, mixed together. Have you guys given any thought to that? You know, I don't know if that
will
come
up. Well, that's where all the depression comes from, because there is a real drug epidemic in this country. And
yeah,
if you drill down to many of the people that are proponents of forced treatment, many of the people in those family movements, if you drill down and you talk to them, many of their family members, that's what it is. It's drug addiction.
Yeah.
And somehow
the new rules are so, with so such overreach, and are so expansive, and are taking people's civil liberties away, taking young people's liberties away. I mean, the laws that just got passed in New York are just atrocious, and do no benefit to anybody except, again, the, you know, people in power. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think everybody's in agreement on this. I think sometimes there's a real issue. Just if you're, you know, like I want to just say, like, either, like I think part of what I really struggle with is this idea of opposition to force until, you know, X happens. And so I would just appreciate, like, if people just said that they were pro-force, as opposed to saying that they're opposed to force until this time, right? I think that that would clear up a lot of conversations that we wind up having. And so, you know, if there's some point in time when force is acceptable, then there's really a pro-force policy that is subjective and determined, which is exactly why they can get away with killing people. Right? It's the exact, you know, force is necessary. And so, I don't know. I just think that as a society, we're up against such things, such hard things, and this man is very scary, I think is going to do tremendous amounts of damage, just great. Remember, great is like, great can be great evil, too. Like, it's somebody like, he shall not be named, right? He was great. You know what I mean? Like, this is, it's not funny. It's not funny, but it's, I think that the apathy, Yvonne, that you were pointing to earlier is just such a concern, and hopefully maybe a show at a earlier time when not so much bombardedness by all of these things can happen. But I think that he did invent a new word tonight. If there's any good thing that came out of this, and it's you know, not in a braggadocious kind of way.
Yeah.
So just remember that phrase and maybe use when appropriate at some point in the future.
Yeah, I think that, this is, you know, 12, this time of night, except for the people on the West Coast, is pretty close, but at least we had the opportunity that is there, and I hope that that we can see, because the questions for the debate are not made public, so you don't have any way of knowing whether they'll be, you know, talking about health issues. But I'm quite sure in the next two debates that will come up.
The next debate is Tuesday, October 4th, and then Sunday, October 9th, and then Wednesday, October 19th. Yeah, because we're like, you know, 40 days away or something. I mean, 6 weeks. Tomorrow is 6 weeks. So
well, everybody pay attention, and I hope
I'm
people have a good night.
Debate also. Thank you so much for doing this whole thing, Yvonne and Jonathan. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Lauren. I just thought of an idea about doing it, and you know, there's no good time, whether it's after the debate or it's a day of what after. And thank you for people for listening in, and have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Yes.
Enjoy, everyone.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks, Yvonne.
Thanks, guys.